So I tuned in and listened to Namaste Bitches yesterday, and Melissa Feaster, she basically announced that she's expecting her child, a child, and that this is great news. Having a baby is always a great news, especially when you were really wanting them. So, congratulations to Melissa Feaster on her pregnancy, and I believe she said that she was 4 months pregnant. And while I was listening to the podcast, I don't know if it's just me, guys. I asked my husband to look at it as well, and I was just like, does it look like Teresa? Like, it looks like her face looks a little puffy. And he said, yeah. And I said, her eyes look a little red. And mind you, guys, it could be allergies, could be like, she could be sick, she could be under the weather. She's been traveling a lot. Obviously, she was doing House of Villains. And then I think she was in Chicago with Melania and Jennifer Aiden for another convention of Vampire Diaries. So, don't take everything that I'm saying here at face value, but my impression when I look at Teresa through my TV screen, her face appeared to be a little puffy and her eyes were red, almost as if like she had been crying, if you recall that last scene or that scene last season when she was talking to Louis in her bedroom and he was basically berating her and saying, oh, your brother and your sister-in-law, they're snakes in a snake pit. If you remember, Teresa kind of had a similar face, like she looked like she had been crying. So to me, it looked like she had that same face on the podcast yesterday. So I don't know. I don't know, guys. Again, it could be nothing. I could be completely wrong, but I'm just saying that her face appeared a little bit different to me. And I wonder, despite Teresa saying that she's super happy and that she's living her best life, I can't help but wonder sometimes if she truly is happy and living her best life. And I will tell you why. One thing she said on the podcast, she did say to Melissa that she was unhappy with the trailer, that, she didn't necessarily say that they did her dirty, but the trailer was released while she was filming House of Villains. And she's saying that, it's basically a bunch of lies. They're basically trying to portray it as if, she has money issues and money problems, or that her marriage is not going as well as it seems, and yada, 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 right? So obviously, everyone is speculating when it comes to Teresa and her relationship. But there's one thing that I have to say, and I kind of covered that in on my blog yesterday. Is Teresa's doing House of Villains, and that's another gig, and she is with a whole bunch of other contestants. And you know what? I'm good for her. Good for her if that's what she wants to do. I remember a time where Teresa was on Celebrity Apprentice, but the thing is, Celebrity Apprentice was really a hit show back then, and you had like A-list celebrities also doing the show at the time, right? Like a mix of A-list and like people that were not necessarily, I don't want to say irrelevant, but not just as active in the either reality TV world or other things that they were doing at the time, right? So not as hot always, but still you had like A-list celebrities. Now, House of Villains, I just want to say that, yeah, we know who those people are, but I'm not going to go as far as calling them A-list, and I'm not going to go as far as saying that they are active in the reality TV. TV world at the moment, right? So it kind of seems like I think it is normal for people to question this choice when it comes to, Teresa wanting to do House of Villains, right? Because, some people don't really understand, like, wow, Teresa's at the top of her career. She's on a hit reality TV show and she's still on that reality TV show. Why would she do villains, right? So some have alluded to the fact that maybe there is money problems when it comes to, or financial problems when it comes to Teresa and Louis, because Teresa's making this much money with Housewives and House of Villains is like significantly less. Why would Teresa chase that paycheck? Like, people are trying to reconcile that. And I have to admit that it doesn't necessarily seem like it makes a lot of sense. So I don't know. Only time will tell if there is money issues when it comes to Teresa and Louis, but I thought that it was a very interesting point to bring up. Now, One thing that I have to say when it comes to the podcast, and thank God for Melissa Feaster on that podcast, because if it wasn't for her, I'm not sure who would be driving the conversation. You could tell that Melissa is the one really, you know, talking and asking questions, whether those are her questions or fan questions. And Teresa, at some point in time, she became a little bit, I won't say aggressive, but I will say assertive. She said to Melissa, "I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, I don't want to talk about that." I think Melissa was talking about the trailer and things that have to do with Louis. And Teresa was like, "I don't want to talk about this anymore. Let's move on and just talk about something else." And at the end of the day, you know, Teresa is on Housewives. She's been on Housewives for 14 seasons, and people want to know a lot that has to do with the show. And Teresa's very tight-lipped about the show. She always says that she can't discuss these things. And it's true to a certain extent. But it would be nice if Teresa could offer more insight as to what happened in prior seasons. Like, I understand why she can't discuss like the current season, but it would be nice if she could go back in time and cover a few things that people, like, you know, cover a few events or questions that people have when it comes to the show. Because at the end of the day, that's what Teresa's known for. She's known for to be on this show that she constantly refuses to talk about, right? And she also said something to the extent, like, a long time ago, she said, you know, if you want to get to know the real Teresa, you need to listen to the podcast. But I find that, and that's really just my opinion, guys, I find that every time that I tune in to listen, Teresa appears to be a little bit unprepared. And she's just like, oh, what are we talking about today? Okay, what's up? Yes. And sometimes it doesn't flow as good, right? It doesn't flow as good because you don't know if she'll be willing to answer that question in the moment. And it's a podcast. People tune in to listen to you. So you have to talk. You have to talk about something, right? And as much as Melissa Feaster has her fan base and people like her for, you know, for her and what she used to do on Side Piece, people are also tuning in to listen to Teresa, who is the Real Housewives of New Jersey, right? So anyways, another thing that I've noticed on this podcast that Teresa seems to be doing very often these days is that she constantly has to say something negative about her ex, Joe Giudice. And I've talked about this quite extensively, and I was just like, okay, what do the girls think about that? Because at the end of the day, this is their dad, right? And Teresa used to make a big deal. She actually made a big deal season 12 with Gia about, you know, her brother Joe Gorga saying what he said about Joe Giudice. And she was like saying, oh, that's their father. You can't talk about their father like that on TV. Okay, fine. But it seems like every chances that Teresa gets, she throws Joe Giudice under the bus. She says that, you know, she doesn't know if she was really in love with him or, you know, she just wanted to get out of the house. He left her with all the debts. He's not really like pulling his weight financially, yada, 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 that he was never her soulmate. He wasn't her guy. Louis's her guy. And now she has gone as far as saying that, her girls, her four daughters, have put Louis on a pedestal, and now these girls want a man that mirrors what Louis does for her. So they want the next man that they have in their lives, like their boyfriend or husband or whatever, they want them to be just like Louis, which I thought was kind of an interesting statement and a little harsh and heartless, because at the end of the day, we all know that Joe Giudice was not always the best husband. Of course, the hot mic moment, what he said about Teresa, calling her to see you next Tuesday on camera and calling her the B word. Never appropriate, especially not for a husband and especially not on international TV. However, that being said, that was one moment in time on TV where he said something like this to Teresa. And there were other times where he wasn't always the nicest. But there were also a lot of times where Joe was very sweet to Teresa and to the girls, right? So at the end of the day, I think that Teresa is maybe overcompensating for something. And I'm not really sure if this is coming from her. Because, okay, this is where I'm coming from when it comes to this particular opinion. We have watched Teresa over the years. She always had a united front when it came to Joe Giudice. She was always defending him when she was married with him. And they were always defending each other, pretty much putting like a strong face to the public, right? So we're not really used to this Teresa who is constantly bashing Joe. And she has only started doing that once she was with Louis, because even before she was with Louis, Teresa was still very protective of Joe Giudice. And she even went as far as getting into an argument with Joe and Melissa at the Shore House, you know, when Melissa, like, you know, threw the cheese bowl and said, you know, what's going on? Like, you know, that kind of stuff. And Joe banged the table. She got into an argument with them because it stemmed from Teresa saying, yeah, I got divorced. And by the way, you and you need to take back your words, because Joe Giudice was a class act. He didn't ask me for any money. And, you know, the divorce proceedings went very smoothly. So whatever you guys said about Joe, it was not true, because Joe was a class act. Okay, so that was what, season 11, I think. So just before she was actually with Louis, right? So Teresa was always very protective of Joe Giudice, but it seems like in recent years, ever since that she has been in this relationship with Louis, that Teresa feels the need, little by little, to say things that are a little mean about Joe Giudice. And I'm starting to think, someone said that at some point in time, an influencer or on a podcast, I can't remember exactly who, but someone definitely planted the seed out there. And now I think that whoever said this, the credit goes to you, but I just can't remember who said that. But now I'm starting to think that it might be true. Maybe Teresa is doing this because of Louis. Maybe Louis feels a little insecure. You know, there has been reports of him being jealous and not feeling completely secure when his wife is around other men and all of that. So I don't know, right? And Louis doesn't have the best reputation out there on social media, or, you know, the court of public opinions has a lot of like strong opinions for Louis that are not always positive. So it's very possible that Louis reads the magazines or reads the blogs or sees what people have to say about him on social media. And maybe he is fuming and he is like, how come everyone still likes Joe Giudice, but they don't like me, right? And maybe behind closed doors, maybe this is more of a problem or an issue in their marriage than they let on, right? So it's possible that Teresa's way of dealing with it is to come on her podcast, you know, she has a platform, and to start saying negative things about Joe Giudice. And even to go as far as saying that her daughters actually want a man to be exactly not like their dads, but like their stepdad. I don't know about you people, but if Joe is listening to this interview, I don't know about you. I'm just trying to put myself in his shoes. If I heard my ex-wife, let's say I was Joe, if I heard my ex-wife say something like this on international TV, well, it's a podcast, but she does the video on YouTube as well, right? I would be so mad. I would be mad. I would be fuming. I would be like, how dare she, right? And it's like, sometimes the marriage does not work, but it's the fact that Teresa's involving the children, and now she's saying, my girls want a man like Louis. Not like Joe, like Louis. And you know what? I have to give it to Joe Giudice, because in spite of all of this, because it's been a few months now that Teresa has been dragging him a little bit, like here and there, any chance she gets, the man has remained a class act. He does not say one bad thing about Teresa ever, 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 ever. Not in interviews, not on social media, not under a post. There's nothing passive aggressive. If one thing he always says, she is a great mother. She was a great wife, and I wish her the best. I don't understand why Teresa can't do the same, right? In my opinion, I think it must be to appease Louis. Someone is causing problems behind the scenes when it comes to the reputation of Juju, of Juju Dice, you know, in the court of public opinions. Now, I'm not saying that people don't see what he did and for what, like, you know, things for what they were. But, you know, if I had to choose, I would say that people like Juju Dice more than they like Louis. I don't think it's unfair to say that. At least I know I did. So anyways, moving on. Now, there's a lot of things that are happening currently on social media, and we're not going to get involved with all of that. I'm not involved, nor do I want to be. But if you have been paying attention on your Twitter, on your Instagram, some people have DM'd me to ask me, what do you think of this? What is going on? I said, hey, I don't know what's going on. I just, you know, take the popcorn just like you, and I'm just watching all of this unfold, okay? And I have no way to prove that those messages that are circulating are true or are real evidence or real receipts, because we live in a time where, you know, it's social media, technology, things can be doctored. I don't know. But let's just say for the purpose of charity that all of it was true. I would say that, yeah, looks a little incriminating, does not look good. And I'm sure if Teresa really has something to do with all of this, I'm sure she regrets it now. Because, you know, you should never really think that your fans are your friends in that way. You can have a friendly relationship with them. But those people were not just fans. They were fan accounts and bloggers and podcasters. And it seems like all of them are mad at Teresa. What did Teresa do? I don't know. But it seems like they feel insulted by Teresa and they have decided to flip on her. So now, you know, you're going to see a lot of like different narratives out there, and people are going to just start changing their tunes a little bit. People that took on Teresa's fights as their own, as if they were part of the cast or part of the family, you will see these people, you know, sing a different tune. Now, maybe they will be more cautious in the future in who they choose to attack, who they choose to insult. Because, you know, if you've been following my podcast or my commentary since 2022, you know that this is not what I do. I don't insult anyone. I don't believe that there is ever a need to do that. Not that I don't know how to insult people, because I can do that as well. I just choose not to. I don't want to be in that type of, you know, vibration or energy. So I choose not to do that, right? But other podcasts do, or blogs do. I don't mind a little bit of sarcasm. I don't mind a little bit of snarkasm. But attacks and insults, just such a low level of energy. I just don't have time for that. And that's it, you know. So I think that a lot of these blogs and podcasters are going to start now behaving and moving in a different way. Maybe we're going to hear less insults. Maybe we're going to hear less attacks on their part, because I truly believe that they do no longer have the relationship that they once had with Teresa. And that's regardless of what they're saying right now, if they're saying we're all good, there's nothing between us, we're cool. I do not believe that this is the case. And the reason why is because, you know, the tea is a little different. It's not as hot. It doesn't seem like they are privy to the same type of information that they used to be privy to. So that is probably a direct result of a little bit of friction between them and Teresa. So that's just by my own observation. That's my own opinion. And, you know, if that could be a lesson for everyone when it comes to this in this space, you only isolate yourself as a blogger or podcaster or influencer by taking on all of these celebrity fights as your own, because one day, you never know, your relationship with that person may not be the same. And now everybody's looking at you like, oh yeah, who are you? You never gave us the time of day and you always insulted us. We don't want to deal with you, right? And that would be normal, right? Completely normal. So that's my opinion when it comes to that. I have to say that I have people that come under my comments sometimes and they say, okay, actually, let me address this. I had this person who came and said, oh, you had an interview with Kim and that person called me a snake and said, what is it? Melissa Gorga wouldn't have you on her podcast. Well, first of all, I never asked Melissa to be on her podcast. Second of all, I never asked Kim D to be on her podcast. This is something that was discussed mutually. You know, it was kind of like, hey, you know what? I have a few questions that I would like to ask you that has to do with the show, not necessarily about Melissa or Teresa, although there's some questions, you know, about them as well, but mostly about the show. It would be interesting to just exchange, right? We're in this world together. We're grown adults. I think competition is a low, you know, level of energy. Again, collaboration is much better. So at this point, we decided that, hey, you know, let's have a little bit of an interview. And I'm the one interviewing Kim D, not the other way around, really. I have 10 burning questions for Kim D, and we went through those questions together. And you know what? It was a wonderful experience. And if you were a fan of this podcast, you would know that since day one, I've always liked Kim D as a character on the show. Okay. And I still do. I still like Kim D. And the fact that Kim D and Melissa have a problem with each other, that's between them. Has nothing to do with me. I will talk about Kim D's behavior when I don't agree with it on this podcast in a respectful way. And Kim D is aware of that. And that's okay, right? But it does not mean that just because Kim D does not get along with Melissa, that I can't have an interview with Kim D. In fact, people need to stop thinking that Melissa is so weak-minded in that way, because she is not. Just, you know, as an example, a lot of people do not like John Fuda, but John Fuda and Melissa and Joe Gorga are friends, and John Fuda is friends with Kim D, or friendly with Kim D as well. So Kim D is not necessarily friendly with the Gorgas. Who was the first, like, who were the first ones to tell John Fuda, go on Kim D's podcast and speak your little speak about your truth, you know, don't worry about us, it's fine. It was them. It was the Gorgas. They didn't say, oh, well, if you go and do an interview with Kim, it means that you're not truly a friend of ours, right? They don't think like that. So if the Gorgas don't have a problem with it, why should you? Why do you come in my comments and say something negative for the day? At least you got it out of the system. You wanted to call somebody a name. You did it. Now you're blocked. And, you know, don't come back. Or, of course, you will under a different account or a different name. But I'm just saying, people, like, please, let's grow up. Okay? It's okay. It's okay to interview different people on a podcast. Or, you know, I'm not taking on their fights. That's between Joe, Melissa, and Kim D. I'm just a person reporting on it, and I have questions for both. And it's okay to love Melissa, which I do, and Joe, which I do, and also like Kim D. That's totally okay. So speaking of John Fuda, I have to say, guys, a lot of people have been saying, like, you know, it's been out there, like a lot of fans and also a lot of other influencers, they've been saying things like, oh, John Fuda is responsible for putting his ex back in prison. Okay, so first of all, I have to say, I have never believed that. I never believed that John Fuda had anything to do with his ex going back to prison. And if you go back a few episodes, like, you know, maybe more than a few, but I addressed this and I said, listen, Brittany, I wish she did something more productive with her time when she was in the halfway house to maybe try to repair the relationship that she has, or lack thereof, with her son, rather than focusing on who John Fuda was 20 years ago and what he did or did not do and all of that, and try to talk about things that were completely irrelevant. So John Fuda has absolutely nothing to do with her current, like, state of mind right now. And if that's what Britney chose to do with her time, then that's on her and nobody else. Okay. And plus, she is the one who needs to be aware of the conditions of, you know, like her probation, or, like, I don't know what it's called exactly. But anyways, she's the one who needs to be aware of that, not John Fuda. So at the end of the day, people need to stop pointing the finger on John Fuda about everything. And, you know, they need to take a real look at Britney, and Britney needs to take a look at herself and just be like, okay, you know, I have messed up in my life. What can I do now to be a little bit better as a person? Okay. So now, the reason why I'm talking about Britney is because a lot of people have been saying that John Fuda had something to do with, you know, her going back to prison. Apparently, guys, I found something online, and you can probably see the receipts or the text messages or screenshots. Again, I don't know if it's true or not, so I'm going to use the word allege a lot. But here's the thing. Someone online said that John Fuda had absolutely nothing to do with that, that the people that were involved in not only bringing Britney out of the shadow and gave her a platform to speak about John Fuda and all of that were Teresa Louie and Jim Leonard. Jim Leonard, which is Teresa's attorney. Okay, we see him on the show, although he started as Melissa and Joe and Kathy Wakili and Rich Wakili and Rosie's attorney. Now he's just Teresa's attorney. So we see him all the time. And apparently, Jim Leonard, allegedly, has his hands and fingers full of grease, because apparently he's the one who, according to that screenshot, he's the one who pulled Britney out of the shadows and gave her the platform to have this Twitter interview with one of those fan accounts to trash John Fuda. And then all of those leaked texts and yada, yada, yada. And then eventually Britney stopped responding because, you know, she gave a live interview on Twitter. I remember I didn't even listen to it because I was just like, there's nothing that this woman can say that is of any interest, because to me, her focus was always supposed to be on her son and not about John Fuda. Okay. So anyways, but I remember seeing or like hearing a little like bits and pieces of the interview on Twitter. And I remember thinking, oh, I wonder how you can give an interview like from, you know, like a full interview like that from a halfway house, but whatever. Right. So the rumor has it online that Jim Leonard is the one who brought her out of the shadows to talk smack about John Fuda. And then when things started to heat up, because she was really not supposed to do this Britney girl, that they flipped on her and kind of like alerted like people in the prison system. And then, you know, she was sent back to prison. So that's what the rumor says. And if that's true, that's really, really, really shitty and really, really messy. And you kind of get a better idea of who you're dealing with now, like people that have, you know, no moral compass or integrity. Because at the end of the day, you know, I have nothing against Britney. I don't know the person. I don't know the girl. She's not even on the show. I was the first one to say that, you know, we should have never even like talked about a little bit of her situation. Like, not that it wasn't done like on the show. They never really brought her up. They just said like, yeah, you know, Jaden, he didn't feel safe with her. And I talked about that at the time. I felt like, oh, just, you know, if she's not on the show, let's not even talk about her, right? But anyways, I have nothing against Britney. But I think at the same time that because she was in a halfway house and because she has all of these charges and, you know, the fraud stuff and like, you know, the meth lab and all of that, right? So because she is in a little bit of a vulnerable position. So I don't know what was offered to her or proposed to her. If those allegations are true, it's possible that, you know, the lawyer might have said to her, hey, you know what? You know, we'll give you the platform so you can speak your little speak about John Fuda. And then when you come out, we'll look after you for this and that or the other. It's very possible. You don't know. And, you know, because she is kind of like, I'm not going to say desperate, but at the same time, yeah, a little desperate because she's in prison or in a halfway house. So who knows what those people promised her if this is true. So all I'm going to say is if this is true, it's kind of gross. It's kind of gross. So anyways, let me know in the comments, guys, what you think about all of that, because this situation is very, 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 very messy. Very messy. Speaking of lawyers, now I'm going to release the second half of this podcast, which will focus on who the players are in the current lawsuit between Kevin Johnson and Louis Ruelas and Bo Dito. So make sure you stay tuned for that one. There's a lot of little juicy details in there. I did a little bit of a deep dive on the lawyers that are representing Louis and Bo Dito. So for Bo Dito, the lawyer representing him is Joe Tacopina. And if the name sounds familiar, you have probably heard of him before, but there's no need for you to do a search at this moment, as I will let you know in the deep dive all of the juicy details about Joe Tacopina and who he has represented in the past. And also for Louis Ruelas, the person representing him is Jeremy Iandolo, and he also has a very interesting career as an attorney and as to who he chose to defend at times. So make sure you tune in for that one, guys. It is normally in the Substack, but I am releasing now the episode. And by the way, if you have not joined the Substack community, make sure that you subscribe. Most of the content on there is completely free, although at times I have to lock some posts because you know, I also have some paid subscribers. So make sure that you subscribe and that you share far and wide and that you like and comment as well. Okay, so stay tuned for the second half of this podcast. And as always, guys, as always, thank you for being a fan and not fanatical. Ciao. Steph Tacopina, also known as Joe Tacopina or Joey Tacopina, is a former prosecutor who runs his private law practice. He previously represented notable figures such as President Donald Trump, Michael Jackson, Alex Rodriguez, or A-Rod, as well as rapper A$AP Rocky, who is involved romantically with pop singer Rihanna. So Tacopina played a significant role in overturning rapper Meek Mill's, for those who are familiar with hip hop and all of that. He had some pretty serious charges, gun and drug charges. So additionally, he attracted a little bit more attention and controversy for criticizing Cardi B, the way that she was showing up in court, her courtroom attire. He was asserting that she did not take the court seriously, but rather treated it as a fashion runway. So Tacopina also serves as the president and owner of an Italian soccer team named SPAL, although he was involved in several other Italian soccer leagues in the past. So there's a little bit of a rumor out there when it comes to Joe Tacopina. The rumor that is he might be allegedly a mob lawyer. So Tacopina's firm was recently retained by Bo Dito, Daniel Rosenberg, and Marco Laraca in a lawsuit involving attorney Kevin Johnson. So the lawsuit alleged violations of various acts, including the Federal Wiretap Act, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, the Stored Communications Act, the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, and the New Jersey Wiretapping and Electronic Surveillance Control Act. So the case targeted defendants Marco A. Laraca, who was representing Louis on his previous case, and he faced accusations of defamation, slander, libel, and defamation in response to his alleged treat of fraudulent claims against the plaintiffs. So these claims were made through emails and letters threatening lawsuits against the plaintiffs for attempting to pretend further fraudulent and unethical behavior by Tacopina's clients. So Bo Dito and Louis Ruelas. So the case also sought
declaratory relief, asserting that conversations and communications between the defendants were not protected by attorney-client privilege or the attorney work product doctrine in both New York and New Jersey under their respective crime fraud exceptions. This was just to provide a little bit of context or history as to who will be representing Boldino in the lawsuit initiated by Kevin Johnson. So Boldino will be represented by Joe Tacopina. So now, just to give you a little bit of just a broader view as to who Joe Tacopina is, I'm going to play a little bit of a recording here for you guys. I'm sorry, I took it from YouTube, so there might be some music that was dubbed onto the video. I will try to make it as clear as possible, but just so you can get an understanding of the type of personality that will be defending Boldino in the next few weeks or months. So here it is.
Joe Tacopina is one of New York's best criminal defense attorneys. Joining us now is Joe Tacopina.
Substituting for Dan today, Joe Tacopina.
I want to bring Joe Tacopina into this conversation. My guest, my very, very dear friend and one of the great trial lawyers in America who wins cases that nobody else could win.
When I walk into a courtroom, I become a predator hunting the prey. I look for blood. I look to decapitate. And I do it through words. I do it through cross-examination. And I do it intensely. When I'm about to rip the innards out of a witness's credibility, I start approaching the witness, and the jury sort of sits up and knows it's coming as I get to stroll around and sort of lead them into a trap door that they'll never see coming and never get out of.
Joe Tacopina, who's Melanie's lawyer, has been like a dog going after this guy on cross.
You felt betrayed, and then 2 days later, you're reporting your friend, right?
I wouldn't call her my friend at that point, but I was recording this.
You call your friend at that point? You wanted her to trust you, right? That wasn't like one of those lies that you initially told to make yourself look better and then corrected yourself later like you did with the police, is it? What makes this a sport? It's bringing the witness down the primrose path of impeachment. It's bringing the witness down a road where they don't think they're going.
What are you saying?
Until it's too late and they realize they're there, then the squirming starts, and it's quite analogous to, you know, a lion in a jungle hunting prey. So I shot him in the apartment, all right, with like six neighbors around me, and no one heard anything. And I cut him up with a butter knife and carried him out myself. Does that make sense to you? The cross-examination is the Perry Mason moment in a courtroom. It's the point where there's the climax. It's the point where the emotions are brought out. It's the point where there's the confrontation. And it's the only part of a trial that brings that to bear.
Is this funny, sir? No, I don't think any of this is funny, sir.
The king of the courtroom will give me a chance to display cross-examination.
That's not how it went, was it?
There will be no one to restrict me, no one to stop me, no one to tell me when enough's enough.
But you didn't tell the grand jury, sir.
This will be cross-examination gone wild. I'm in charge. What this will do is add real-life drama to an already dramatic situation. In King of the Courtroom, I'm the judge, I'm the jury, I'm the executioner. I'm Joe Tacopina.
Okay, so that was a little bit more information on Joe Tacopina, the attorney that will be representing Boldino in his case with Kevin Johnson. So while I was doing a little bit of research surrounding the case and the people that are involved in the lawsuit, I decided to rewatch the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, which was a great movie, by the way. And just to provide you with a little bit of a refresher, for those of you who have seen it or not seen it, in The Wolf of Wall Street, Boldino is actually in the movie and he plays himself, and he was portrayed as a real-life private investigator who work closely with Jordan Belfort, who is the main character of the story. So Bo Dido was hired by Jordan to investigate the circumstances surrounding Jordan's arrest and to gather information for his defense. So in the movie, you can see that they have somewhat of a close relationship, although a professional one, but I just thought I would play two little excerpts from the movie. In the first clip, you hear Bo Dido asking Jordan Belfort to give him a call from a payphone. And in the second recording, they're actually eating at Bo Dido's favorite restaurant, Rayo's. They're talking about things that are a little bit shady at that point. But you can also hear in that recording that Bo Dido is telling Jordan in the movie not to mess with his private investigator's license, as he is no longer a cop on the streets anymore, and he doesn't want to get in trouble. And I'm just saying that to you guys because the recording might be a little low.
Hey, Bo, what's going on? Jordan, listen to me clearly. I cannot talk to you on this phone. I have to talk to you.
Get out of here. What's going on?
Listen to me. Leave the fucking house, Jordan, and then call me from a payphone. This is not a fucking joke, Jordan.
Yeah.
What is that? I don't know what the fuck's going on.
The closest payphone I could get to was at the Brookville Country Club. It was a real wasp stronghold. Just a mile down the road from my house.
Hey, Bo, what's up? It's me. What's going on? I'm at a payphone. What's going on?
Listen to me carefully, please. Your little friend there, Brad, your little buddy, he's in jail.
What the fuck's he in jail for? What'd he do?
I don't know what he did. My friends in Long Island told me he got picked up in some fucking shopping mall. He got locked up by some...
Wait, did you say a shopping mall?
Yeah.
He was with Donnie. He was supposed to deliver some money to that fucking fat piece of shit.
I'm gonna go talk to him right now. Listen to me. Don't go. Listen to me. That guy Denham, that FBI agent guy, somebody told me he's got your phones tapped, your office and your home.
Don't talk on the motherfucking phone.
Oh, fuck. I got it.
Jordan.
You didn't try to bribe this fucking FBI agent, did you?
No, I didn't try to bribe an FBI agent. You think I'm that fucking stupid? No.
What the fuck are you saying? I can't understand. Say that again.
I said I'm wrong. I'm scared of an FBI.
What's going on in a wedding video? It's like an invasion of my privacy, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's intrusive, you know? It's got pictures of your whole inner fucking circle. Pictures, names of the people. You know what he's trying to do? Exactly what he's doing. Look at yourself. He's trying to rattle you. He's trying to rattle your old lady so she nags you so you become a fucking witness.
Or he wants me to rat on myself. He wants me to give information about my...
Listen, the good fucking news is, you know, I know everybody downtown. Call up the Justice Department, the DA. Nobody even knows you fucking exist, so calm down.
They don't know I exist.
No.
You know who he is, right?
Yeah.
So if I just wanted to get some more information, like just find out what he knows. I mean, you can go to his house. Go to his house, right? Tap his phones a little bit. Fuck him. You can get some information.
You don't fuck with these guys like that. You don't fuck with them like that. What are you, nuts or something?
What do you fucking do? What do I pay you for?
I have a fucking PI license, you know. I make a living at it. I'm not a cop anymore. Now take my fucking license away from me, all right?
Okay. Okay, if I can't do that, can I give the guy a call?
Why is that? Jordan, do me a favor. The only one that calls this guy is your fucking lawyer.
I can't call him.
I told you. Whatever the fuck you say to him, he's going to use against you. Don't you understand? He's smart. You're dumb.
Okay, so this came from the movie The Wolf of Wall Street, and I stated earlier, this is, you know, a version that is adapted for the movie. You can't believe everything that you see in the movie sometimes. Things are said just for a shock value. So I just thought it was interesting to include that regardless. But another thing that I stumbled upon during my research was an article that I found that was from 2009. And there are several articles that are available online from the Daily News or the New York Post. But I'm going to read a little excerpt to you guys, and I will also leave a snapshot or a screenshot of the article on the Substack for those of you who are interested. But I don't know if some of you are familiar with this person. His name is John Elite. Not sure if this is his actual real name or if it's the name that he acquired later on after he cooperated. But I used to follow him on social, well, not on social media, but on YouTube. Just because, like I said to you, my listeners before, I have an interest with everything that has to do with secret societies, the mob, and all of that, right? So I was familiar with who John Elite was, and he also had a podcast that I used to listen to. So to make a long story short, for those of you who are on Kim D's Patreon, John Elite was also a guest on her show at some point in time, I think a few months back. So there's an interview between Kim D and John Elite in the Patreon. Just to make it relatable to the Housewives show, John Elite actually appeared in several episodes of The Real Housewives of New Jersey. You can see him. Well, the people that don't know who he is, you know, he won't stand out to those people, but he definitely stood out to me because I was following his podcast from a long time ago, right? So you can see him in the background. He's like this man always dressed in irons, and he has like shades. You know, like I would say that he's like a good looking guy. And he is often seen in the background of the show attending a few events, whether they are Kim D's events or even Teresa Giudice's events. So anyways, back in 2009, there was an article that was written in the New York Post, and this is what it said. Celebrity crime fighter Bo Dietl yesterday said a mob snitch claimed that the ex-cop sold secrets to the Gambino crime family, hit him like a bullet in the chest. It's horrifying that someone could accuse you of something like this, Bo Dietl said at a news conference he called yesterday to clear his name. I fought against criminal activities all my life. This is so opposite of what I'm all about. Personally, it's like someone shot me. So then they go in, the article goes into like explaining who Bo Dietl is, or, you know, he's a private investigator. He used to be a cop. There was a movie made about him, yada, yada, yada. So then it continues and says that John Elite claimed that Bo Dietl took payoffs from the late John Gotti's brother, Richard, in exchange for case information. John Elite, a former Gambino associate, is the prosecution key witness against John Jr. Gotti and was a witness earlier this year in the Brooklyn federal trial on hitman Charles Carnelia. Elite dragged other noted names in the mud, including legendary crime fighter Joe Coffey, who personally arrested John Gotti Sr. 3 times. So this is what the article said. And obviously, I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying that it's not true. But I thought it was interesting that there were reports as early as 2009 that Bo Dietl allegedly sold secrets to the Gambino crime family in exchange of payment. So I thought that that was very interesting. Now, again, people can argue that once people decide to cooperate, they won't always tell the truth, that they might just amplify the truth, or they might just give like random names just to kind of get the feds off of their backs. But from what I understand, it is a very common practice for the feds to ask, once they arrest someone, if they can give, like, if the suspect or the person that is under arrest can provide them with the names of some crooked cops.
Let's move to Louis Ruelas' attorney in the current lawsuit that he is under. So, as I mentioned before, Louis had retained the services of Marco LaRocca, who was the lawyer or the attorney in his previous case when it comes to the extension of the restraining order and all of that. And now he has retained the services of another attorney. His name is Jeremy Ayandolo. And just to provide some historical context regarding the past clients of Jeremy Ayandolo, it's just important to note that Louis Bobby Mana was also one of them, and he is referenced as the thin man or the thin guy in the mafia. So Bobby Mana was associated with the Genovese crime family, and he gained notoriety for his involvement in a plot to kill John Gotti, and that's according to the federal authorities. The Genovese crime family seems to hold a little bit of significance for Bo Dito, as he referenced that in an interview that he gave to David Yontef several months ago on Behind the Velvet Rope. He said, "My favorite family is the Genovese family." So another intriguing fact for my listeners is that Bobby Mana received a sentence of 80 years in prison and remains incarcerated to this day. So the judge who presided over the trial and imposed a sentence of 80 years was none other than the late Justice Marion Barry. And if that name rings a bell, interestingly, Justice Barry happens to be the late sister of former President Donald Trump. So there is no correlation there, but I just thought that that was a little bit of a fun fact here. So it's important to say that a few years ago, Jeremy Ayandolo, who is now Louis Ruelas's attorney, he attempted to secure the release of Bobby Mana from prison after serving approximately, I think it was 33 years behind bars at the time. So obviously it was denied, and the lawyer was upset by the court's decision, and he was very vocal about that. And he also expressed that his belief was that the federal authorities had mishandled the case, and that there were no real evidence that Bobby had plotted to kill John Gotti. So in an emergency motion filed that year or that month, I can't remember exactly when it was, but I believe it was circa 2021. It was recent, right? It was during the pandemic for sure. So Jeremy Ayandolo, he argued to the judge that the aging mobster is slowly dying in a Minnesota medical prison, and that he deserves to spend the rest of his life with his family in Hudson County. So he also stated that Bobby Mana had a litany of health issues, and that he was also dealing with hypertension and Parkinson's disease. So he could no longer take more than one step or two on his own. And he also said, after 33 years in prison, the man has paid his debt to society. So just to provide a little bit more context, Bobby Mana previously applied for a compassionate release, and the motion was denied by Judge Peter G. Sheridan. The judge wrote in his motion for compassionate release that despite the fact that he considered Bobby Mana to be frail and had some important medical issues, the nature of his life as a career criminal and his leadership in the Genovese family outweigh his age and medical condition. So Jeremy Ayandolo argued for Mana's release. And by the way, Marco LaRocca was also part of that. He was not representing Bobby Mana at the time. He was representing some other mob guy, but both of them were involved. So Ayandolo argued for Mana's release based on his poor health. And he also cited recent cases where federal judges granted compassionate release to prisoners in similar circumstances. So one example he mentioned was an 86-year-old former Kansas City mob leader who was released due to the COVID-19 pandemic after over 30 years in prison, who was serving an 80-year sentence as well. And he also highlighted another case, like from this leader in Harlem. I guess it was like a drug dealer
who was serving a life sentence, who was also released by a judge in January of that year after people decided to advocate and campaign for his release. So Jeremy Iandolo was heard saying to the press, "Why are only Italian Americans getting denied?"
So I hope that this gave you a little bit more of a broader view as to who those characters are, the people that are involved in the current lawsuit. So something tells me that these attorneys are not to be messed with. I understand that the job of defense attorney is to advocate for their clients, but needless to say that some of the people that they have represented in the past may have a little bit of a checkered past, right? So while I was doing some research on Jeremy Iandolo and the people that he had represented in the past, I came across this guy online who was talking about Bobby Manna. And then this guy had something very interesting to say earlier in during this episode. I mentioned Trump's late sister, Marion Barry, who was a judge who presided over the case. So this is what this gentleman had to say about Marion Barry and Bobby Manna.
I did want to bring up an interesting connection.
Was to be true that Bobby Manna was conspiring to kill the judge and other players in the case. This happened while he was already incarcerated. So you can make your own judgment on that as to if you think that a person like this should be released back into society or not. So let me know in the comments what you guys think about the key players that are involved in the current lawsuit.